This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. There are an estimated 1.4 million adults in the United States and more than 125,000 people in Texas who identify as transgender. The umbrella term transgender refers to individuals who do not conform to the gender identity that they were born with. Under the Trump administration, agencies in the federal government are considering a more narrowly defined use of the word gender, how that would look. They want to redefine it almost entirely. The proposal seeks to determine sex through the lens of a person's genitalia at birth as simply a biological condition that is unchangeable. Advocates are concerned that this reversal would exclude transgender people from taking part in crucial federal programs like health care and limit civil rights laws, and this policy could be downright dangerous for many in our community. We're talking about transgender rights this afternoon. You can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon in the studio. Ashley Smith is with us, the president of the San Antonio Gender Association and transgender rights advocate. Lou Weaver is transgender programs coordinator for Equality Texas. And Asaf Orr is a transgender youth project staff attorney at the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Welcome all of y'all to The Source today. And again, the number, if you want to call in, we invite you to 210-614-8980. Ashley Smith, you've been very outspoken. You have been out there telling people, you know, that you've confronted Greg Abbott, the governor, about his stance on these issues in the past. Where do you see things right now?
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I'm really pleased to be here. Well, you know, currently our community is very scared by the current political environment. We've been under attack by both the Texas legislature and at the national level by the current administration. There are, like you said, there are about 1.4 million of us around the country. And, you know, here in San Antonio, I've been able to be very outspoken, and I'm really privileged to be able to do that. I don't think that everybody in the transgender community has that privilege. And so I'm very fortunate to be able to be out. And because of the attacks that we've faced over the last few years, I feel like it's very important for me to do that.
Under the previous president's administration, President Obama, seems like there was progress made in a way of defining rights, creating equality, ending a level of prejudice, and creating a atmosphere of acceptance in the nation. And has that ended?
Yes. Well, the current administration has rolled back a lot of the progress that we made under President Obama. You know, he is really kind of a hero for transgender rights when it comes to, you know, getting our passports corrected to the gender that we identify with. Open military service, and then protection in public education and in healthcare. We made a great deal of progress under President Obama's administration. Really, we have been under attack from the Trump administration from the very outset. Within a few weeks of his inauguration, we saw the rollback of a lot of the Title IX rights in education. We have seen an attempted ban on military service, which is still working its way through the courts. And then we've also seen kind of an open encouragement of religious exemptions throughout the federal government.
One of the issues that seemed to be working its way through the courts and was going to go to the Supreme Court was the Gavin Grimm case. And this was seen as something that could solidify, crystallize law about transgender, non-binary rights and availability. Asaf Orr, Transgender Youth Project staff attorney at the National Center for Lesbian Rights, can you talk a little bit more about the Gavin Grimm case?
Yeah, Gavin Grimm. Thank you, first of all, for having me on. Gavin Grimm was a transgender student, high school student in Virginia, who was excluded from using the boys' restroom and sued his school district, alleging violations of Title IX, which is a federal law that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex, as well as the Equal Protection Clause. And he was successful in getting the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals to rule that, in fact, it was sex discrimination to deny him use of the boys' facilities. But as a result of the Trump administration's rescission of its guidance, the Supreme Court decided not to hear the case and instead send it back down. It's still sort of working its way through the courts again. But I think, you know, although there was certainly a lot of attention focused on Gavin Grimm's case, during that time there were many other cases that reached that same result. There was one that we litigated in Ohio. There was one in Pennsylvania. Recently there was a judge in Florida that held that both the Constitution and Title IX requires that school districts treat transgender students equally and give them access to the correct facilities. So certainly, although there hasn't been a pronouncement from the U.S. Supreme Court on this issue, there have been many lower courts, both at the trial level as well as the appellate level, in the context of schools and in other contexts, finding that transgender people are protected under sex discrimination law.
But looking at the Gavin Grimm case and the way it was treated by the Trump administration immediately after inauguration, this was a concrete example of how things have changed in Washington, D.C. Otherwise, this would have gone to the Supreme Court, and there would have been arguments, and, you know, it's likely a decision would have come out that would have been favorable to a transgender community. Is that the way you see it, Asaf?
Certainly possible. And I think, you know, one of the things to point out, and certainly we can't underestimate the effects of what the Trump administration did in rescinding the May 2016 guidance from the Obama administration or any of the other actions that the Trump administration has done. But what is clear is that it is the courts that get to interpret what the law is, and that certainly the Trump administration can, you know, put out, you know, guidance documents and regulations and things like that. But ultimately, it is the role of the courts to interpret what the law is. And courts across the country have consistently interpreted our sex discrimination laws to include and protect transgender people in a wide range of areas, from schools to employment to healthcare. And, you know, we certainly, again, Trump's conduct has had a very negative social effect, and as the earlier speaker mentioned, has caused a lot of fear
right
within the trans community.
And we're going to talk more about that when we come back. We'll talk about why this is important to all of us. What does this mean for the transgender rights community and for the community at large? Or this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We'll be right back after this one-minute break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about transgender rights. Do you identify as transgender or non-binary gender? What do you think about the trans rights in America and in Texas? Are you concerned about some of the changes that we see coming from the White House? We want to hear your story. You can be anonymous if you choose. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Lou Weaver is the Transgender Program Coordinator for Equality Texas. Lou, we're getting ready for another legislative session in Austin. The previous session, one of the items that sucked up a lot of oxygen up there was this bathroom bill thing. Do you think we saw any echoes of the bathroom bill in the midterm elections? And you think we're going to have to, is that going to come back around in January with the new legislative session?
Hi. Thanks for having me on your show. I think this is such an important topic to be discussing right now. Some people say they don't want to talk about the bathroom bill. We hope that we're not going to see it. But there's other people. Lois Kolkhorst, for example, has said that this is still on her agenda, that she still wants to file a bill, that she wants to talk about it. Yesterday was the first day of filing for the next legislative session. We have not seen a bathroom bill being filed yet in either the House or the Senate, but that doesn't mean it's not coming. There's also other bills that are going to be that could be filed around transgender people having access to health care, access to foster care that's affirming, access for same-sex couples to be able to adopt foster children. And I think that, the bathroom bill is the main thing that people are concerned about, but it's not the only thing. So we need to have a broad lens as we're looking at what could be coming down the pipeline. I also want to talk about the fact that when these bills are out there in the world, that it's not just whether or not the bill passes. It's the fact that transgender people, including our youth, are being told over and over again that they are not the same as their peers, that they are not going to be allowed the same equality as their peers as they navigate school, as transgender people are trying to navigate a job, or just going out to the movies. This is really detrimental to the healthcare and the mental and emotional well-being of transgender people.
And so in the upcoming session, Lou, any chance that they could actually pass some protections?
You know, we always hope that we can pass protections for trans folks. It is difficult, depending on the makeup of what our legislative body looks like. We did pick up some different Democratic seats in the House, and I do think that there are some people that realize that being completely against equality for everybody is not going to make sure that they have a job the next time around. So I definitely think that there could be some options to put forth full equality to see what we can all get at the state level.
And Lou, with Speaker Strauss no longer going to be in the big chair up in Austin, helping guide the representatives, do you think that is going to be something that you're going to be watching?
Of course. Definitely whoever the next speaker is somebody that we hope is for full equality for everybody. We need to watch who is in the seat, controlling the way the House goes, and keeping everything in a moderate way and opening up the floor for discussions about equality and stopping things that are going to prevent folks from being able to navigate their everyday life as they live in Texas.
The number to call in if you want to join our conversation as we talk about transgender rights, 210-614-8980. Shelley is on the line. And Shelley, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you. My comment, and it's a question as well, as a black woman in America that fights racism, gender discrimination on a daily basis, and it's been a 400-year struggle, it seems to me that the transgender LGBTQ movement, it almost wants to leapfrog and to get ahead of, we're fighting for the same rights that he's saying on the phone that LGBTQ people or transgenders are being denied. And I just don't see why the plight there should supersede what we see playing out in the streets of America every day.
Okay, so let me go to Asaf Orr, Transgender Youth Project Staff Attorney for the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Do you see this as there's a competition among others who are trying, also working towards their full civil rights being recognized or human rights being recognized? Is this, is there a choice to be made, or can it all be all of the above?
That's a great question, and I think There isn't a choice to be made. We all have to fight together against racism, homophobia, transphobia, and all sources of discrimination that are currently present in our society, and certainly something that NCLR, and I know other groups as well in the LGBT rights movement generally, are really focused on is making sure that when there comes an issue that is, for example, specifically about racism or specifically about sexism, that we stand in unison with those groups as well to make sure that we're addressing all forms of discrimination in our society. It's certainly not an effort by, the LGBT rights movement to get ahead in line or anything. It's really about making sure that we create a tide that raises all boats, so to speak, and making sure that we are addressing all forms of discrimination in our society.
But transgender rights is an issue that is intersectional. This is something that impacts everyone, whether there are African-American people who are dealing with transgender issues or disabled people dealing with transgender issue. If there's any type of person in the world, they are also can fall into this subset of individuals dealing with this particular need. And so Ashley Smith, president of the San Antonio Gender Association and an advocate for transgender rights, is there still like a story to be told? I mean, yes, of course, Shelley, 400 years of dealing with the terrible history of discrimination and against and oppression of Africans and African Americans, but also, but for, I mean, this is basically, we're now only getting now a chance to see and experience and hear the stories now of transgender people who this is, but still they have been there for 400 years as well.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad that this issue has come up, you know, because half of transgender people will encounter some kind of violent attack during the course of their life. And when you combine that, you know, structural racism that is still persistent today, when you combine that with anti-trans bias in society and sometimes poverty, that can have deadly consequences, particularly for transgender women of color. And we saw that last year here in San Antonio with a woman named Kenny McFadden, who was pushed to her death. She was pushed into the San Antonio River and drowned. And unfortunately, the person who admitted to pushing her into the river will not stand trial for that. So that kind of injustice is something that is unfortunately all too common in these kind of situations. And the other issue there is that a lot of the safety and the violence issues can sometimes go unreported. Just because of that distrust that a lot of transgender people have with law enforcement.
Yeah, I want to talk about the danger element of what happens as we have our highest office in America is adopting this very narrow view of transgender rights, so narrow that they want to ignore that they actually exist. So Lou Weaver, can you talk about the two different, I think, elements of, and there's probably more than that, I can think of more than now, of the danger to people who have transgender rights issues of being dealt with. Like, we know suicide is a major problem, and also hate crime, but also cutting themselves off from medical care because of how difficult that could be achieved. That's also something that is a danger. Should you talk about the danger element here?
Sure. And even I live in Houston. I live in the third largest city in the United States, and literally the world's largest medical center is out my back door. And it's still difficult for me as a white-presenting, male-presenting, transgender person to access health care when I need it. I have to make sure that my doctor is educated about what I need for my health care. And it's not just around the health care that I need for being trans. It's a lot of doctors refuse to see patients for a cold or, you know, pneumonia, simply because they are trans-identified. And this is in healthcare settings, whether it's a private practice or whether it's a hospital. And I've personally seen it, and I've heard so many stories about people going in to get to the emergency room and needing to see a provider and being denied care. This is traumatic for a lot of people, the people that are experiencing it. It's dangerous for the people who can't get healthcare. And then it's dangerous for our community when we hear these stories of trying to figure out where is safe to go. And so if I don't have a regular PCP, you know, my primary care physician to go see, do I wait until I'm super, super sick and go to the ER and hope I get taken care of? So many people aren't accessing healthcare in the same way. And then if you add multiple other identities on it, whether you're black or brown or anything other than white, it creates other inequities on the way to get care. And then, as you say, hate crimes are a lot more rampant in the entire LGBTQ community as a whole than they have been recently. But are people taking these seriously? Whether it's, are we able to report them to the cops? Are the cops seeing them as hate crimes? Are the officers, and then it's like, well, it's because you're this or you're that. It's like, I hold multiple identities. Many people hold multiple identities. And so if you're black and brown or black or brown and trans, what does that look like for somebody? So if we take into consideration that about 134,000 transgender adults live in the state of Texas, 91% of them do not have documents that line up. So they don't have a legal document that matches who they are with a name and the correct gender listed on their IDs. So how can they go to a bar and have a drink? How can they make sure that they can get a job or get a house? It is legal in this state to deny somebody employment or housing because of who they are and who they love. So that makes it very dangerous for somebody because they can be denied a place to work. They can be denied a roof over their head. So how do they navigate keeping themselves safe? And whether or not, you know, if they're on the streets, then obviously that leads to other things, more hate crimes, more risks for encountering what happens when somebody lives on the streets because they cannot get a place to stay. Many transgender folks are not allowed into a shelter for being who they are. And so when we think about the ways that people are not being allowed to access just everyday care, everyday, the things that many people here in Texas and here in the United States take for granted, going to work, going to school, having a car, it's really difficult to do all of these things if your documents don't line up. And so hate crimes are also, like I said, rampant around here. And if I don't feel safe talking to the cops, talking to the police department, that they're going to see me for who I am, that they're not going to mock me and judge me, am I going to report that I've been beat up or harassed or sexually abused? So there's a disconnect for transgender people of knowing where that safety net is and being able to access that and whatever that safety net looks like. Talking to the cops, being able to access healthcare, going to a shelter if they need it. During Hurricane Harvey, we had transgender folks. I had transgender people that I know messaging me and asking me if they could go to the George R. Brown Convention Center and if they would be safe. There was a hurricane barreling down in our city and people were being told to evacuate, and trans people were thinking they were going to have to ride it out because they didn't know that they would be safe within the confines of a shelter that the city had put up. Now, luckily for us, Houston is a very diverse and welcoming city, and I told them they could go and would be safe, and they were. But just think about that extra layer of fear of, can I go access what all of my neighbors around me are accessing?
And so the concern about safety is that they think they're going to be preyed on or denied access or what is
all of the above. If I can't get into the shelter and there's a hurricane, then do I have to sleep on the streets? Am I sleeping on my car? Am I safe there? Will I get preyed upon there? Because then I become, you know, I don't have that safety net to go to. Then I become more vulnerable, and I'm already vulnerable.
And the main issue is that there is no authority franchise that you can turn to. If you ask a police officer, it's you don't know what you're going to end up with. You could get a very understanding one, or you could not. Is that it?
Exactly.
All right.
Yes. I spend my time working with the Houston Police Department, and some of them are great, and they want to learn better, and others are just like, why, you know, you're just people, but they don't see us as
so
people.
That gets down to the issue of, we need to tell the story. We need to let everybody know people are people. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. Call in if you've got a question or comment, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues talking about transgender rights right after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about transgender rights. We're hearing from the Trump administration. A memo has been leaked saying that they will like to redefine transgender rights. So we want to identify it as something that sex is only through a person's genitalia at birth, and it can't be redefined according to what a person's identity is. It's simply a biological condition that is unchangeable. And this is something that is dangerous to many folks in our society, in our community. Why is that? And where do these different attitudes come from? How do we talk about this in an honest way as we talk about sex versus gender? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Lupe is on the line. And Lupe, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about what one of your guests said earlier, that many transgenders are denied care by individual doctors and facilities. And I've heard this before, but I've never heard what their excuse is for denying this care. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
All right, Lupe, thank you for that call. Ashley Smith, can you help us with this? A president of the San Antonio Gender Association Transgender Rights Advocate, what have some of your contemporaries told you? Why they have trouble accessing health care?
Well, as Lou mentioned, one of the issues is just having those identification documents updated. A lot of folks don't have that, and so you walk into a healthcare setting and you're already being misgendered and feeling somewhat disrespected. I think a lot of people, particularly as they're trying to obtain transgender healthcare, face very difficult challenges finding physicians who are willing to help them. I myself have encountered that, and they don't really give you an explanation. They just say no. But yeah, you know, there's all of these assumptions that I think that physicians will make about what it means to be male and what it means to be female. And you know, when you consider that, you know, transgender men may still have a period, for example. And you know, I've been asked, you know, when was my last period? There's just a lot of sort of misunderstandings with physicians and healthcare providers who are just not up to speed with our needs.
Do you think it comes down to there are many people in society who just haven't been educated and they feel a level of anxiety? It comes from not knowing what's expected of them or what's expected in general, that suddenly they're in an uncharted waters for them. And now they are putting up, you know, rather than confront the fact that it's just another patient in front of them that needs my help, this is something that I'd rather not deal with.
Right. And, you know, here locally, the UT health system has started to make efforts to educate people who are going through school about transgender healthcare, but, you know, folks who have been practicing medicine for years may look at it as something that is almost exotic.
Another caller. This is Rudy. And Rudy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just had a comment to make about, like, the people that don't understand the transgender community. I am a straight male myself, but, you know, it really doesn't bother me. but through work, I work in the music scene. And I don't think people understand that the transgender bathroom bill is going to cost the city a lot of money. And a lot of, like, there's also, like, a lot of record labels that refuse to come to the city or to the state because of that.
All right, Rudy, thank you for the call. And so Lou Weaver, Transgender Program Coordinator for Equality Texas, that was a major argument that came up fighting the bathroom bill in the last legislative session, that had it passed, we would have lost conventions and jobs.
Yeah, I want to point out one thing and highlight one thing first, that my sexual orientation and my gender identity are two different things. There are transgender people that identify as straight or heterosexual, and there's transgender people that identify as within the LG and the B and the Q. Those are two different things that were said there. But as far as businesses and the reputation that Texas has, Texas Competes is an amazing resource that we have. It's an amazing organization where businesses are standing out and say, we don't want to ruin our reputation and the reputation of Texas. And we don't want a bathroom bill. We want all people, no matter who they are, who they love, what color they are, to be treated equally here in the state of Texas. And that is so important because people won't come here. People don't want to come to any of the cities that don't have non-discrimination policies. And many have said, I believe Amazon said they wouldn't go come in and get open a new building if we had a bathroom bill in place, a bathroom ban in place. So it has been incredibly important from mom and pop shops all the way up to Facebook and Google and Amazon that's saying, don't do this. This is bad for business. we need to make sure that everybody is safe here. And it's also about concert venues. If the concert venue says I can go and hang out, but the hotel doesn't say I can have a room to stay in, then I still can't go to that concert, or I still can't travel to go to that concert. So everything needs to be in tandem. We can't say that one place is safe and one place isn't, because I still have to go. Once I leave my house, then I have to navigate so many different things.
Another caller, and Mary. And hi, Mary. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I really appreciate your program. It's very good for all of us to hear different people's views. My point was simply that I have two beautiful transgender nieces that live in California, and they have never come to see me here in Texas because simply they're afraid. And I don't know why. It's not different from having a sign on the bathroom that says only white good religious people can go in here.
All right, Mary, thank you for that. Asaf Orr, Transgender Youth Project staff attorney at the National Center for Lesbian Rights, Texas. So you're, I guess, in Washington, D.C., or some, you know, looking at Texas from your point of view, where do we stand?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of legal protections, I think one of the things that you spoke about with Lou earlier is the lack of state-level protections, which is certainly a concern. There are a growing number of states that are passing state-level anti-discrimination protections that include transgender people, which, you know, going back to the Texas Competes, would, you know, increase the ability of businesses in Texas to attract talent. And have also the benefit of, you know, sending a message to the LGBT community or the trans community that they have protections here. We see you, we appreciate you, you're a part of our community, and we want to make sure that you're protected. So in that regard, that's one level, a layer of protection that is not present in Texas that is available in other states. And then I think, you know, from the perspective of federal protections, those are going to be uniform across the board, and there have been some good decisions, even out of Texas, for LGBT people in general, and hopefully that will also give some confidence to trans folks in Texas that they're going to be protected under the law. But again, you know, regardless of what the law says, there's certainly a significant social component to it. And I think what other folks have commented on is that from sort of the social perspective, it is very difficult to access healthcare. It's very difficult to get identity documents to be consistent. And all those things have a significant effect on the day-to-day life of transgender people living in Texas.
Okay. And Belinda has called in. Belinda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to make a comment. I'm an educator in San Antonio, and I had my first transgender student around 6 years ago who really educated me, who prompted me to want to learn more. And lo and behold, my child actually came out as transgender a few years after that. So I was fortunate I had the education already to love my child and support my child. However, I had to make a lot of trips to Austin for counseling, and I live on the northwest side in San Antonio. I think they need to do a better job for transgender youth. Educators need to learn the science more behind transgender and try to fight the hate, but I think San Antonio's growing. We're trying to get there, but there's a lot of parents and teachers that need to be well-versed on who these people are and love them for who they are.
Belinda, thank you for your call. Lou Weaver at Equality Texas. Belinda mentioned the science. What does the science tell us?
You know, science is telling us that our brains are like my brain as a transgender man is hardwired to be a man, regardless of what my body, how people perceive my body, not how I perceive my own body. And I think that we're going to see more science is telling us that. But I also want to point out that our social scientists are showing us that when our youth, when our young people are affirmed in as the gender that they identify with and who they are, that they come out of depression. Like, they can be depressed when they're because they're not being affirmed. They can get angry. And all of these other things can be going on for our youth. But as soon as they're affirmed by at least one adult, that their suicidality can go down. And they become affirmed, they can come out of a shell. And I've personally seen it happen with so many youth around. I just got to spend the weekend with a trans at the trans family camp. And so see so many trans youth being around each other, just being allowed to be kids, and knowing how they were pre-affirmation by their family and how they are now when they have supportive parents, supportive friends, supportive schools, and how much of a difference that makes. And so we're seeing a lot of that happening.
All right. So, Lou, we got to take this break. We'll come back. We're going to continue the conversation talking about transgender rights. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. What does the future look like? 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about transgender rights this afternoon. Do you want to, if you have a question about the transgender community, what is equality, gender equality, and how does it matter to you? How do you see it? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Ashley Smith is with us, president of the San Antonio Gender Association, a transgender rights advocate. Ashley Smith, what does it mean that San Antonio has a non-discrimination ordinance? San Antonio is on the record saying that we're not going to tolerate discriminatory behavior in this way, but what does that actually mean?
Right. So in San Antonio, we since 2013, we've had a non-discrimination ordinance that protects transgender people in public accommodations. It actually covers a very wide variety of groups, including, you know, veterans, racial minorities, religious minorities. But specifically for transgender people, that gives us the ability to safely go into a restroom, for example, or check into a hotel without without fear that we are going to face discrimination or be thrown out. The current penalty is not huge, but usually these things can be worked out if they are reported. And if people do have something to report, they should go to the City of San Antonio's Office of Equity website.
Are these not these local efforts to deal with transgender rights? Osof Orr over at the National Center for Lesbian Rights, is this happening more and more? I know that during the midterm elections, we saw a vote taken in Massachusetts.
Yeah, and I think what we're seeing is increasing, you know, information and understanding about transgender people, and that's something that through radio shows like this and other efforts, we're getting more information out there. And I think it was a great result in Massachusetts that the people of Massachusetts said, no, we are not going to be a state that discriminates against transgender people. That's not okay. That's not who we are. And I think we're starting to see that as greater information and understanding increases, that communities are largely saying, look, that's not who we are. We're not going to discriminate. It is really important to us that transgender people feel safe and welcome here, and for all the reasons that Lou mentioned earlier, not only the mental health benefits, but the many benefits that transgender people experience as a result of being treated with dignity and respect that everyone deserves.
Lou Weaver at Equality Texas, are there job protections for someone who is transgender? Can a fired transgender worker sue for job discrimination?
That might be a better question for us off, but you know, it's very difficult. There are very few protections on a local level. So the only way to fire is that I was fired based on sex discrimination. To sue was I was fired based on sex discrimination. So you have to file an EEOC complaint. And then how long does that take? Can I afford to not be working or to be filing a complaint about all of this and waiting for it to go up through many levels of red tape and all of these different types of things and be out of work? Or is it just simpler to go get another job? and getting another job can be incredibly difficult. So there's not a whole lot of places and a whole lot of ways for transgender folks to say, you are not treating me correctly in my workplace because I'm not conforming to how you think I should conform.
So a soft or, these protections, they're either weak or non-existent. I mean, is that right?
Well, Title VII, which is the federal anti-discrimination law that prohibits discrimination in employment, does prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex, which courts have unanimously held covers transgender people, or nearly unanimously held cover transgender people, and certainly that would apply with equal force in Texas. But again, you know, as Lou pointed out, there are many reasons why someone might not file a discrimination lawsuit. And it's not only termination that is discrimination, also harassment on the job, you know, refusal to promote or, you know, to discipline an employee inappropriately. There are many ways that transgender people experience discrimination in the workplace. But, you know, out of fear for how long it might take or their ability to get another job or so many other factors, unfortunately, transgender people may not file those cases. But there's certainly a significant amount of precedent across the country demonstrating that transgender people are covered under Title VII. And also to go back to an earlier point, just sort of about the sort of social effect or the impact of discrimination. There was a case a number of years ago, a Macy's in Texas was making the argument that transgender people aren't covered under Title VII. And there was such a significant pushback against Macy's making that argument, on the one hand saying trans people aren't covered, but on the other hand claiming to be a great place for LGBT people to work, that ultimately Macy's withdrew that argument. And so I think, you know, even employers are starting to recognize, regardless of whether or not there's a case specifically in Texas, that in fact Title VII does protect transgender people against discrimination in employment.
Okay, back to the phone lines, and this is John. And John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you both. I enjoy your discussion. I think the other caller was right that it's good to have these kind of conversations. My question was in regards to LGBT rights. At what point is their rights more important than, say, the rights of the children? Let's say maybe you have an Islamic child that doesn't want to or is forbidden from using the restroom with a biological male, but because that person identifies a certain way, and we don't want to take away from their rights either, but how would it work that you could protect all of everyone's rights? You know, I mean, I want for there to be more equality, but not at the risk of children being harmed in restrooms. That's a concern I have.
All right, John, thank you for the call. Let's go first to Lou Weaver, Transgender Program Coordinator for Equality Texas.
Hi, so that's a really good question. And we are all concerned about the safety of our children. We want everybody to be safe, whether it's youth in school or wherever we are at work or at play. What we're talking about, though, is it's not one person's safety over another. There are ways that we can all be safe as we navigate society. And a biological boy, I am a biological boy, regardless of what somebody else might think. So reducing people to this type of a situation is not okay. We need to be able to protect our transgender youth. They are the ones that are mostly at risk, whether they're in school for being bullied, harassed, or worse, as we've seen with the statistics. And so it's really about making sure that we are accommodating and taking care of everybody that is around us.
And Asaf Orr, can you add to that at the National Center for Lesbian Rights?
Yeah, I think it's an excellent question. And certainly, as Lou said, we want to make sure that all people feel safe and comfortable using the facilities. And in a situation like the caller mentioned, you know, it's really about ensuring that everyone has the opportunity to use the facilities in a way that's comfortable for them, but not using that as a way to exclude other people. And so for someone who feels uncomfortable using a facility with a transgender person, we would encourage, for example, in the school context, that schools make other restroom facilities available to people in that kind of circumstance so that they can have access to restroom facilities and go from there. But certainly what we don't want is people using that discomfort as a way to exclude people from schools, from public life, from accessing facilities.
And Ashley Smith, anything more to add? I mean, why are we so fascinated with bathrooms?
I don't know, David. But
you know what happens in bathrooms? People go to the bathroom. That's basically
right.
It.
Right. You know, Chief McManus testified last year that since the 2013 NDO was put in place here in San Antonio, we have had no issues in bathrooms. And, you know, like Lou was pointing out earlier, the way that those issues, when they're brought up in terms of potential legislation, they're designed to sort of demonize and stigmatize the transgender community. But, you know, these kind of safety issues are really just non-existent.
So if we really looked at where children are being put in danger and how they're being harmed, it's not in bathrooms and it's not from transgender individuals. There are many other sources in the world that are putting children in danger that need to be addressed. This is not one of them.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, generally, having talked with some of the transgender youth, it's not other kids who are having the issue with this. It's usually adults.
And so, Asaf Orr, where do you see happening now with the Trump administration? Anything concrete coming from them dealing with regression on transgender rights?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't want to speculate, but certainly there are many things that could happen. Certainly they've given an indication that they want to redefine the way that the executive branch defines the term sex under federal anti-discrimination law, which would have, you know, significant and far-reaching effect, not only within the Department of Health and Human Services, where that memo has originated, but also in other areas of the executive branch. That said, in order to do those things, there are many procedural hurdles that the Trump administration will have to comply with, and will certainly be watching to make sure that they dot every I and cross every T in doing that, and if not, certainly would challenge their ability to make such a sweeping change. But even still, the courts remain the one that interpret the law.
And the courts, we'll see what happens there. Asaf Orr is a Transgender Youth Project staff attorney with the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Lou Weaver, Transgender Programs Coordinator for Equality Texas. With us in the studio, Ashley Smith, President of the San Antonio Gender Association and Transgender Rights Advocate. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.